RadioInfluence.com.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the Wednesday edition of the Dark to Light podcast with
me and Beans.
Yes!
It's a Beans and I. So Wednesday, how you feeling over there, Beans?
I'm good. I'm okay. I want to tell you, I loved the title of your show last night.
Thank you.
Can you explain? The title was Gitmo Muscles Up and Mother Jones Buries. What was it? Mother Jones Buries.
Buries Bones.
Buries Bones. Yeah. Can you explain what that was all about? Because I didn't get to watch the show, but the title sure was great.
Well, the opening segment was on these two little articles that had popped up. Number one was Ezra Cohen Watnick, once again, has moved on into clandestine services, and a couple of my military friends had gotten in touch with me, and they're not on the inside, but they just have been in the. They've been in the system. They know what certain language means. And they were speculating, I wonder if he's in there looking for someone in particular, or if they, you know, what operation is being run, whatever. But either way, that's one thing I wanted to bring on up. The second thing was that there was over 100 National Guard, Minnesota National Guard that were sent down to Gitmo to increase security. So military, almost like military police were sent on down to increase security down at Gitmo again. And obviously that's something that is always of great interest to people because many of us are always keeping our fingers crossed that there's going to be a major high level roundup of traitors and sent on down there for special treatment. So That was the first little half. That didn't take too long. The Mother Jones article that I had popped up, and let me see if I can actually just quickly get it on up here so you can hear the title and you'll know exactly what the hell I was dealing with here. Here we go. I got my format up from last night, and let me click. Where the hell is it?
You know, did you do any research into the Gitmo thing outside of what you had seen?
No, because I didn't really go deep into it. I brought it up as a headline, and I didn't really theorize. But it's just one of those things that it always raises a red flag for people these days. What did you do? You have something on that?
Well, I've seen that happen like 100 times before. I think
it happened not too long ago.
Yeah, they rotate those people out and in. So did you get any of who left in the and did they talk?
No.
Okay.
No, yeah. I got that from, I believe, military.com.
When I first started seeing that, I wanted to see what it was all about, and it happens a lot.
Yeah. Well, hey, like I said, it happened though. So I brought it on up. I know, sad trombone. Sad trombones all around. But here's Mother Jones. Ready?
Mm-hmm.
This Tracy got me. This got me big time, and I and we had some great calls, and we did some great things on this. Headline: Why are right wing conspiracies so obsessed with pedophilia?
Ugh.
And this Ali Breland spends so much time, making the greatest point as to why we are obsessed with pedophilia. Because outlets like Mother Jones continue to do everything they can to deflect and diminish and to make things sound ridiculous. And the way that they chose, especially with this article, is they had gone all on into hyping up that the McMartin preschool daycare situation out in the 70s or the 80s out there in California was a result of a satanic panic, and that there was no tunnels underneath. Everybody said there was tunnels underneath McMartin School and all that, which is ridiculous on the face of it. because just in October of 2019, the FBI released over 600 pages on the Finders cult. Yeah. And very mysteriously, on page 48 and 49, everybody was like, what the hell is this? 2 pages worth that substantiate that there were tunnels found underneath the McMartin School. And they're talking about the length. They're talking about the depth of it all. They're talking about the animal bones that were found down there, which completely substantiate all of the claims from the kids that they were murdering animals, not only just for sacrifice reasons, but to scare the kids into never saying anything again, because that's what they were going to do to their parents. He never talks about how that most of those children had chlamydia, that they all had damage to their genitals. They completely, once again, this is the kind of position that this area of the media constantly takes on this stuff, and they want you to think that we're obsessed with some kind of conspiracy theory. The conspiracy is in your reporting.
It's sick that they're trying. You know, they're holding up pedophiles at the same time as they're trying to make people who care about kids look like. If anybody doubts at this point, with all the arrests that we're seeing and everything else, you're really going to say. I mean, it's just a sick, twisted, demonic position to take. It really is.
Oh yeah, and they constantly give the. I mean, the other thing is there. We all see it. Openly sexualize children constantly. They constantly offer sympathetic platforms to pedophiles who are now being openly theorized about whether or not pedophilia is just a sexual orientation that needs to be better understood instead of violently squashed. And, you know, this is just the thing that keeps happening over and over again. So that's why I said Mother Jones buries bones, because they're just – it's just like, don't look over here, look over there. Jeffrey Epstein was Jeffrey Epstein took a couple of pictures with Donald Trump, and he is the epitome of white rich male. That's all that Jeffrey Epstein is for these people. They don't even want to go deep on that.
It's horrible.
So
horrible.
I had a conniption fit the other night when I saw Surviving Epstein trending on Twitter, and people were going on their intersectional feminist diatribes about how, you know, this is what white rich men think they are. They think they're above the law. So you don't understand the story and what is really at all. Then
yeah,
this is far more interesting than Me Too.
Yeah, so listen, a year and a half, 2 years of studying that stuff, and to see these, you know, there's all these outlets that are doing all these hit pieces on, you know, these conspiracy theories that they never present correctly, it's just stupid. Like, who pays it? Why are people still even paying attention to that anymore?
Yeah.
How many hit pieces on good people have to come out before people just say, you know what, you guys are useless? Like, I mean, that's why whenever anything comes out in one of these media outlets, like about Durham or anything else, and people are like, oh my God, it's never going to happen, I'm like, why are you listening to these people? Just stop listening to them. They never tell you the truth, ever. Mm. I mean, never. They never tell the truth. When is the last time they've reported something accurately?
I mean, what was it, Sunday night? I don't know when it was. It was a couple of days ago. I laughed. I saw the headline and I just started laughing. CNN reporting that Donald himself on Mount Rushmore.
Yeah, yeah.
I said, oh, I don't even need to read into this. Well, because, of course, it's a source, an unnamed source who is familiar with the conversation.
Yeah, an unnamed source familiar with his thinking.
He wants to be familiar with his thinking. That's the kind of phrasing you would get.
Yeah.
Familiar with his thinking.
Three people familiar with the president's thinking. Yeah, okay.
I guess we're all familiar with the president's thinking, right?
I mean, anybody can say that.
And I'm familiar with your thinking.
You are? What am I thinking right now?
I don't know.
So you're not...
I don't know.
I'm thinking about how we're going to segue into the story of yesterday, which was the Joe Biden announcing that Kamala Harris.
I guess we can just segue into it that this is another trash heap of lies I mean, it's just one, the in the lie being the enthusiasm around this. Yeah. Number one, the lie in anybody saying that Joe Biden picked Kamala Harris. Kamala Harris was picked for Joe Biden. I don't know who did it. The lie
did it
that
really...
she is a black woman, the yeah. lie that she is exciting. She, I mean, I don't know. Do you remember, Tracy, she was one of the first people to drop out in December after Cory Booker, I think. She dropped out in December. She was polling like under 2%. She had no more money, and she was completely dealt a fatal, lethal blow by Tulsi Gabbard. Why anybody would say that this is amazing, an amazing pick here, is beyond me, just on that alone. And I don't know. I think it's I think it actually highlights the Democrat Party's racism and sexism, because they had a chance to make her the presidential nominee.
And she had to come in second. You know, the funny thing is, this morning, this guy seems like a really nice guy, actually, but just very misguided. Benjamin Wittes just shared a picture. Benjamin Wittes of Lawfare fame. Mm-hmm. He shared a picture of Kamala Harris, you know, gazing into Joe Biden's eyes and said, good morning. And I just went under there and I was like, I didn't realize that Lawfare blog was partisan. But then I saw somebody's tweet underneath and it said, what a good day. For the first time in a long time, I woke up so happy knowing this face is going to work for us all. So excited. And I said, ... I don't think that's her face anymore. She changed it.
Yeah. No, she had a NASCAR pit crew work on her face. So
it's crazy because she has no eye whites in that clip she did about what's his name dying. She doesn't have whites in her eyes. Like, yeah. People are sharing pictures everywhere of this demon spawn like looking thing.
I don't, you know, Tracy, I was reading a Thomas Wichter thread that I might actually read tonight on the show, because it has some good World War One history in there.
The one that he wrote about Tim Cast, Tim Pool.
No, this one was last night about Joe Biden and Kamala Harris. How even though there's a lot of people, including myself, not too long ago, it was just like, okay, well, the convention is on August 17th, and I think that there's a number of things that can happen before then that will reveal who the actual presidential candidate is. Not because I still find it hard to believe it's Joe Biden, but
I think they're going with it, Frank.
I think they're going with it. Seriously.
I can't believe we're laughing about it, but it's so true. They're gonna go with it, Frank. They're gonna go with it.
But you know, and I don't know. And it's even though we make our jokes, I always do it with a little bit of trepidation, because I don't ever want my jokes and my the levity I try to find in these things to double as overconfidence, because I am not confident in anything, because we're not dealing with very honorable people. This is not a very good time in American history, and the forces you're working against actually want to see the country gone and completely redone in their image. So I look at this and I say, all right, well, that's a horrible, horrible decision. And on the face of it, it would never win or any kind of voting base. But when you consider, once again, the overtime that they're willing to run in the media, the overtime that they're willing to run on the state level with these governments who have stepped up big time in 2020 to disrupt not only the domestic order of things, but the world order of things. You know, the state governments have been far more impactful than all of the crazies on the federal level. In fact, they've actually given a lot of people on the federal level a lot of cover these the last few months. You haven't seen a lot of people that are usually holding the reins for the first 3 years of the Trump presidency, when they're talking about Russia and impeachment and one thing after another. They've been given a little bit of time to kind of get out of the limelight and go and I don't know, campaign in some way. I don't know. It's weird.
It's weird. The whole thing is weird. Everything is weird. 2020 is the weirdest year in history ever. And with that, we'll move to General Flynn, Frank. Yesterday.
Yeah, what happened with this? I know you were listening.
So it was interesting. And I want to preface by saying, Frank, that like we said this the first time around. It was like the day after this hearing or the day of, I did the podcast alone because you had an appointment and it took too long for the hearings to be over. So we kind of postponed the podcast and then you couldn't join me for it.
Yeah.
So I said this the first time around. Everybody was freaking out saying like, oh, my gosh, I'm so worried that these judges were asking questions and they didn't seem like they were supportive of General Flynn. And they seemed like they were already prejudiced against him and blah, blah, blah. And I said, don't worry so much about that. Just take a breath on it because they ask questions, even if they are, they ask questions. Like if I wanted to hear your side of an argument for a point, I would probably ask you a question that would provoke you to counter the opposite argument, right? Does that make sense? Like, I would say, like, you know, well, the sky is purple sometimes. Tell me why we shouldn't label it purple all the time. And then you'd have to explain why you don't agree. So they do that with hypotheticals and with their questions. They don't, it doesn't mean that they're asking the question just because they agree with what they're asking, if that makes sense.
Right. I guess they just have to, they have a some kind of an obligation to play devil's advocate, to have all aspects of the case on record.
Yeah, all aspects of the arguments and the positions so that they can make a decision based on all those arguments. So it's basically one big debate, right? The judges have to hear all the arguments from all the sides, and then they get to ask all the questions they want about, you know, whatever. Then there's another round where the attorneys get to rebut and kind of clarify things that they have heard that weren't necessarily portrayed correctly or whatever. And then there's like a last round where they get to come back. So arguing for General Flynn was Sidney Powell. Arguing for the government was Solicitor General Wall, which is really amazing because that's not something that usually happens. Solicitor General usually argues in front of the Supreme Court. Just gives you an idea of how seriously the government's taking this. And then Beth Wilkinson was Judge Sullivan's attorney. And I can tell you right now, she had the weakest of weak positions. She even knows she can't defend Judge Sullivan at this point. It's really ridiculous. And I don't want to go through the history of everything all over again, so I'm not going
to. I just don't understand how he has become almost like a de facto plaintiff in this.
He is. That was one of the big arguments throughout the thing.
Jeez.
At the very least. And, you know, a couple of days ago, the court itself, the en banc panel, came out and said, please prepare your arguments to, you know, defend or say why we shouldn't remove him for the appearance of bias or bias. They wanted to hear why, the judges themselves. And then the arguments come and there was some liberal judges that were female that were just ridiculously rude. As you'd expect, talking over people, really not letting them answer the questions. It was almost like hearing what they did to Attorney General Barr. And, you know, it was frustrating because if you're there to just bloviate, then what's the point of having the attorneys there? And then, you know, the most interesting thing is one of the most senior judges on the panel was Judge Henderson, who everybody thought was going to go towards the opposite direction in the three judge panel. But she is one of the people that voted for General Flynn for the writ of mandamus to remove Judge Sullivan or to remove the case. And she just said, she brought up a Thoreau quote, which was really just the best thing ever. She said, I only have one question. She said something about like there was so much evidence that has now come out to prove the innocence of General Flynn. It was a pro-Flynn quote all the way. Like, you could tell she read the case and really studied what had happened and read the exculpatory evidence. And she came to the decision that it was just completely hogwash. And that, you know, and she, that's all she said the entire time. So you know where she's going to go. So basically, he has to get the majority of this 9-judge panel. And I have a couple clips from the hearing or from the arguments yesterday from Sidney Powell, if you want to listen.
Please, let's do it.
Okay, so here's Sidney Powell arguing why Judge Sullivan should be removed from the case.
There are no circumstances now under which Judge Sullivan can continue on this case because his bias demands his disqualification. Just the very appearance of bias is enough to demand his disqualification. And here we have a long history of decisions made on the basis of extrajudicial contact and the blistering op-ed in the Washington Post that led him to choose the amicus he appointed He even waived the requirement of local counsel for him. He's added additional perjury and contempt charges over General Flynn's head. The perjury is now teed up for additional punishment at the recommendation of the amicus. Judge Sullivan's failed to follow this court's mandamus itself for 15 days and then took the unprecedented step of seeking rehearing by filing his own petition for rehearing in this court when he has absolutely no standing to do so. Taking on the mantle of an active litigant has to disqualify him from proceeding any further in this case if all the things that happened before were not already sufficient. Your Honor, the usurpation of power does apply here. That's exactly what Judge Sullivan did when he appointed Mr. Gleason in the stead of the government as soon as the government moved to dismiss the prosecution. There's no authority whatsoever for a judge to pile on and add on his own prosecutor against a criminal defendant. The fact that this is a Rule 48A motion as opposed to the Bill of Particulars issue and will makes all the difference in the world, because only the government can decide when to stop a prosecution, and that's the authority he is intruding on. He's not entitled to ask any questions about that whatsoever when more than a mere conclusory statement has been made. And in this case, we have a 100-page motion to dismiss supported by stunning exculpatory evidence that was suppressed for 3 years or more. Mm. This is an extraordinary case. The process he's created is beyond the pale, as Judge Ginsburg would say in sentencing Smith. And if nothing other than sentencing Smith requires that it be ended and mandamus issue.
She was fantastic yesterday.
She always is. She always is. And that was great to hear, because I have not heard anything of this. I knew you were covering it. I knew you were really locked into it. So I was looking forward to today's episode for this reason.
Yeah, I have her closing argument, too, at least 2 minutes and 20 seconds of it. Just absolutely fantastic, passionate, well-pled. And you know, I have to say, I don't think I have any clips of Solicitor General Wall. He is a genius attorney. He is a genius. He's a genius. There's no other word. It's crazy listening to him argue the way he argues. He always, in hearing him, he always starts his rebuttal by pointing out where the judge was right. You're right, blah, 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 blah. And then showing but and giving the reasons why that argument either doesn't apply or there's case law that refutes it or whatever. Just brilliant to listen to. He's like an encyclopedia of litigation. I mean, he can pull cases out that he knows like the back of his hand, you know, in Smith versus blah, 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 1968 in the District of Ohio. Like, just craziness. I was like, my God, this guy is amazing. Like, you would never want to be, that's why he's won so much, but you never want to be up against him. And Beth Wilkinson was completely out of her depth. I wish I could find some clips of that, because her arguments, she was just like, one of the judges was saying, so are you saying that there is going to be a limit on the questions that are asked in this hearing with the amicus brief? Because the government's argument is they're going to ask all sorts of questions and try and poke and prod into why the government decided to do what it did. And one of the standouts yesterday was a quote by Wall that said, "Keep in mind, we went above and beyond in showing the exculpatory evidence here that, you know, backs the reasons why the Department of Justice doesn't think that this will be in the interest of justice anymore. There is more we couldn't give because it's being used in other investigations."
Other investigations, huh?
Yeah. Yeah, it was one of the most telling things that was said all day. And I wish I had the quote. I just have to find it. But let's listen to Sidney Powell's closing arguments yesterday.
Can't wait.
Criminal case in which a man's liberty and entire life has been consumed by 4 years of litigation that the executive has now determined within its sole discretion should never have been brought against him. He has been under the scourge and of this criminal process now for almost 4 years. Mr. Gleason has no valid role here whatsoever. It's the process itself since May 7th that has been part of the abuse that General Flynn has suffered.
These are completely unprecedented proceedings, and the reason they are is because they should never have happened. Mandamus doesn't need to have an order to seek review of it. Its very purpose in existence is to correct a usurpation of power or the district judge exceeding his authority, which he did the very minute he appointed Mr. Gleason to step into this case in the role of a prosecutor, essentially, when the executive branch, in its sole discretion, decided this case should never have been brought to begin with. So he's been through this for almost 4 years now, cost him millions of dollars, had to sell his house because of it, been called a traitor and treasonous for absolutely no reason, and not any of this should have happened. So it is imperative that this court restore the rule of law and issue the writ of mandamus to compel the judge to grant the motion to dismiss and to disqualify Judge Sullivan, because the very fact that he thinks he has an interest that he can petition for rehearing to this court on is sufficient evidence of appearance of bias that mandates his disqualification under this court's decision in Al-Nashiri. The appointment of the amicus has to be vacated, and the order must be dismissed immediately as a matter of law on the face of the motion itself. To borrow from the Second Circuit decision in HSBC, put simply, the court's role is not as a super prosecutor to second-guess a core function of the executive branch, but as a neutral arbiter of law. He's lost that neutrality, if not sooner than at least by the time he filed a petition for
It goes on, but that's basically the brunt of it. I mean, how, you know, she's not wrong about any of that.
I wish I had lawyers like that flying around me.
I know.
In defense.
I mean, Lynn Wood, her, Harmeet Dhillon, Robert Barnes, Ron Coleman. We've got some good ones in our corner. Some really good ones. And Sidney Powell is going to go down in history, I think, as one of the best. I mean, she, if it wasn't for her, history would have taken a much different path. A much different path. General Flynn would be in jail. We would never have learned any of the stuff we learned. I mean, everything would be different right now. So the most intriguing, as per Catherine Herridge here, most intriguing plus perhaps most significant revelation from today's oral arguments at appeals court in line of questioning with Judge Merrick Garland, Acting Solicitor General Jeffrey Wall revealed that Attorney General Barr, who ultimately made the decision to drop the case against General Flynn, may have more information than has been made publicly available. Wall claimed that under the circumstances, they went further than they were obligated to. And by the way, quote, Judge Garland, just to drive that point home, we, the AG, of course, sees this in a context of non-public information from other investigations. Wall continued, quote, yes, I just wanted to make clear that it may be possible that the Attorney General has had before him information that he was not able to share with the court. So what we put in front of the court were the reasons that we could, but it may not be the whole picture available to the executive branch.
Hmm.
Yep.
Oh.
So it was really interesting. It was a really interesting 6 hours. I did a breakdown on it on the radio show yesterday, and then I went into detail on the Ron Johnson 11-page letter, mixed it in with the Schrage Ukraine connection, which I found a lot more information on after we did the podcast on Monday. And that's what I did on the
show.
Yeah,
that was very illuminating on Monday.
Yeah, because I found a Google cached picture of the Facebook post that Schrage made asking for people to attend the hearing. And I also had a conversation with someone very close to the situation who would be in a position to know about these things, who said who was familiar with the thinking of everybody.
I'm familiar with the thinking of everyone in this country, and I can say wholeheartedly.
Say it. What are you going to say?
I don't know. I'm just terrified.
Nobody knows.
I'm terrified, Tracy.
So, listen, having this event that supposedly Paige and Halper met for the first time at in July is completely ridiculous. School's out for summer at Cambridge. So it doesn't make any sense, first of all.
I like the singing.
Yeah, you like that? That was horrible. Because I wasn't going to sing, but like my subconscious mind told me to. So I started schools like completely wrong. And then by the time I realized it, I had no choice but to finish. You know, let's hold on. Let me just break this up a little bit here with some interesting personal stuff. So I have a problem for Frank that I mean, I get so invested in what I'm doing that like I completely, my mind tunes out a lot of what's going on around me when I'm very focused on a task. And that happens a lot of the time, like at the dinner table, I'll be reading my phone or whatever. And, you know, my family will be talking to me and I'll hear them, but I am like almost like sleep paralyzed where I can't respond. Like I hear them, I know what they're saying, and I'm so engrossed in what I'm doing that I can't respond to them. And everybody's going to get upset with me that I'm doing this stuff at dinner and I should be spending time with my family. And I absolutely agree, which is why it's become a running joke. Now I don't try not to use my phone at the dinner table anymore because dinner just happens to fall lately in the middle of a time where everything's going on. And
are you eating a lot earlier now?
No, well, yes, I am actually. We're eating at around 4 now. We used to eat at like 6.
Damn.
Yeah. So anyway, long story short, they mock me and they make fun of me and I hear them doing it. And then I finally like regurgitate to them everything that I had heard them say. But my husband can talk to me and I'm just completely oblivious to everything he's saying. And I've made a conscious effort over the past few months to not do that anymore because it's really wrong. So the intricate ways in which my brain works, like I'm trying to explain them to you because I like had 700,000 thoughts going through my head as I started singing school. And
oh, no, I know how it is. I'm sure a lot of people out there who are listening to this right now are caught in that too, where it is possible to be thinking, I mean, for your mind to traverse the universe within a span of 3 seconds.
Yeah.
You know, it is possible for it to happen, and it's really weird. It actually calls all of my rudimentary understanding of linear time into question. You know, like, you know, in Watchmen, Dr. Manhattan is he's pretty much, he exists outside of linear time where he pretty much sees time for the past, present, and future, that it all is right there, and in some respects it is a form of time travel. I feel like we're all time travelers in that way. And once you, but then again, it starts one. I think it comes down to what the stimulation is. What is it? What's the catalyst for breaking down your focus on the present? Because once you have decentralized and defocalized all of your conscious, your being, and you have defocalized yourself away from the present, you sitting at that dinner table, concentrating on the food in front of you, the people sitting around you. Once you've defocalized that and you've kind of drifted back into the scenery, it's so odd to be absorbed by almost like 3 other dimensions, but still have a foot in the present.
Yeah.
It's odd. I really do think that we're time travelers in that respect. But you do bring up something else. There is the etiquette aspect of it that needs to be there's etiquette that needs to be abided by. So they're being disrespected by, you know, this standing in the same room of a zombie in a trance.
That's me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it happens to everybody now. I would have to say that at least if we're going to play the at least game, even though, you know, I guess my advantage is that my day is not done. If I don't have a band, last night I had our first band practice with the guys in months. And so I got home around 10 o'clock instead of usually it's 9:20. I ended my show at 8:30 so we would have more time and I wouldn't get home late. So I get home around 10 o'clock. Lauren is still up. We're able to sit down. I eat a little, you know, an omelet. And at that point, I don't care what the hell's going on in the world. So I don't have my devices anywhere near me. If I was eating dinner at 5, though.
Yeah.
That'd be rough in the middle of the week.
Yes. And let's make some things clear before, you know, everybody rightly attacks me for this. I have plenty of time set aside where there is the phone is away. We're either watching a movie, we're playing a board game, we're doing something together, we're outside. There's always time for that stuff. So it's not like it never happens. There's dedicated time and it's great time. But lately, the 4 o'clock dinner has really been rough for me because I can't not have a piece out about a breaking news topic because I was too busy eating dinner. Like, my business fails if that happens, and then nobody can eat dinner because I have no money.
I can't believe you eat at 4.
I know. I don't know why it is that we've started doing this. I really don't. But maybe we should change it. The other thing that happened. What?
No, go ahead.
You were going to say something.
I remember as a child, my grandparents, I mean, they were the ones that were making most of our dinners during the week. And even if it was during school months, we would eat around 5:30 or so. I know that. Lauren and I, though, we have been getting earlier on the weekends, like on a Saturday. Sometimes we'll work all day on the yard and in the house, and we'll just do personal things. And then all of a sudden we'll be wiped out and just hungry as hell. And it's 4:30. You're like, so what do you want to do? You want to get a reservation for 5? And we feel like we're old people showing up for the early bird special. I don't know.
Well, here's a clip of a video that I wanted you to listen to, Frank. You have no idea what it is.
Oh, boy.
It's coming. Here we go.
Care if somebody decides to loot a Gucci or a Macy's or a Nike, because that makes sure that that person eats. That makes sure that that person has clothes. That's reparations. That is reparations.
Yeah.
Anything they want to take it, because these businesses have insurance. They're going to get their money back. My people aren't getting anything.
That's the leader of Black Lives Matter in Chicago.
Yeah, yeah. I know. I know the nutritional value of a television is very, very high. So, you know, you sit down, you eat a television, you eat some shoes.
Some Gucci purses. Jewelry.
Yeah. Or what are they saying? That no, we need this. We need to eat because we're going to steal from one place and we're going to what? Sell it? You're going to engage in capitalism afterwards?
Yeah.
What are you going to do?
So it's
either you're going to go and eat televisions because you're hungry. You're hungry and you need to eat a television, or you're going to steal a television from someone who actually had gumption in life to open up a business and then go sell it. Sell it 100% profit because they have insurance. When you don't, and someone, only losers would say something like that or hear something like that and think that there's any merit to it, because only a loser would know would not know how much time goes into opening up a business that goes into picking out a location to decorating a storefront, to getting your business your business model in order, to finding the funding to open it on up, to get that insurance, to make the payments, to market yourself. It is a labor of love. It is sometimes a labor of necessity. It is many times a passion that people have. And to say that, oh, don't worry, they have insurance, reduces all of that struggle and all of that personal effort to nothing. To nothing. That is, if you broke in, you destroyed somebody's business, something that they put all of their time into, maybe that they had their family that was behind them, you're raping somebody. Don't worry, they have insurance. Don't worry, you can rape a woman. There's plenty of great hospitals out there that can take them in. Medicine's great these days. Therapy is great these days. Rape whoever you want. That's exactly what she's saying.
It's the same thing, yeah. Yeah. Doug Collins, Frank, is calling for Christopher Wray to resign. You want to hear that little tidbit?
Sure.
I like Doug Collins. How about you?
He's been great. He's been great for the time that he's really gotten some spotlight. He really has been great.
I love how fast he talks. It's my favorite thing.
Yeah, because it's antithetical to the slow talking Southerner.
Completely antithetical.
Yeah,
It's like he's from New York, but he's got a Southern accent. Here we go.
Exactly.
Yeah. That's why I love it.
With Director Ray, it's time for him to resign. It's time for him to move on. Let's let other people get take the reins here. Because when we see this kind of, either he was willfully not knowing what was going on, he was intentionally dismissed, leaving the Senate, or there was actually a cover-up going on, and there's a part of this. This has just been continuing on. The Horowitz report came out, the Inspector General, they said they implemented all the, quote, recommendations, but yet we never saw people move. We never saw a real move to go beyond that. So, Maria, I think what we're seeing here is again, this is an unveiling of what was a very dark time in the FBI, a very dark time that Bill Barr is shining a bright light on. And now, though, with Christopher Wray, it looks like he just needs to move on. It's time for him to resign. Let somebody else come in so that we can have clearance and clarity on what actually happened and what's actually being done to make sure this never happens again, whether it's lying to Congress or lying to the American people, or better yet, as Comey and the rest of them were doing, actually taking actions into their own hands to affect an election almost 4 years ago.
I mean, great. Once again, it is August 12th, and I don't have a crystal ball that tells me that Donald Trump is going to be inaugurated on January 20th. As much as I know he should, based on reality, I'm so uncomfortable about everything, Tracy.
I know.
I feel like I'm like wearing one of those what do they call it? You know how the horse hair sweaters? It was one of those old ways of humbling a person. You know how like really, really intense religious people, they'll self-flagellate and they'll kind of whip themselves to try to be humble and remember of their deity or whatever the hell it is. Well, there was also another way of keeping them uncomfortable and always keeping their mind on the sacrifice of their life and the choices that they have made in their life. And that was wearing a horsehair sweater where there's really rough, coarse, prickly, itchy hair on the inside of the sweater. Okay.
I hate those.
And it just makes you, I feel like I'm wearing a horsehair sweater. I just don't.
That was
a
long way to get to that analogy.
I'm just saying. I feel like we're wearing the horsehair sweater.
It's the worst, wearing an itchy sweater where you have to wear a shirt underneath it. Otherwise, it's like, ugh, I can't live like this.
Yeah.
I might take out the whole bit about my braining an amoeba.
Okay.
And now people are going to be like, what did she mean, braining an amoeba?
Just for everybody, if she takes it out, Tracy's fine. She didn't get one.
Yet. Lacey Johnson won the primary yesterday. Lacey Johnson's going to be going against Ilhan Omar. Where'd you go?
Wait. But he's a, or she?
He.
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 He's not a Democrat.
Nope.
Oh, okay. You want to, okay.
Well,
I heard that Ilhan Omar won her primary easily.
She did, and Lacey Johnson won his. So,
what was the turnout like?
That's a good question. Turnout in Minnesota 5. Hold on, let's see. I'm surprised that what's his name didn't have this up. Minnesota 5, 2018. They're not giving it to us. They're not giving it to us.
That would be interesting to learn.
Election results. Let's see. 2020 election results. They don't have it up yet. Interesting. Well, we'll find out eventually. I'm surprised Barris doesn't have anything up about it.
Got to get Barris on the show soon again, too.
Yeah.
We're coming down to several wires, and I saw once again Nate Silver. I know he loves talking about Nate Silver's predictions, but Nate Silver, of course, put the odds of Biden winning the election at 72%. 72%, which is just slightly lower than what they were giving Hillary Clinton a chance of winning. And, of course, at the end of his thread of the 72% prediction is there is, of course, a good chance that, you know, the other factors that put the, you know, this possibility of a win in Donald Trump's favor. Maybe history. Maybe recent history and your inability to do polls, Nate. That's number one. But once again, these are all factors that make up the horsehair sweater that I'm wearing.
Well, I hope you can take it off because it's important that we have.
Well, I got a baby on the way, so
I know you're going to be so distracted.
What's the due date again? The 17th of September. We're a month away. Oh man.
Oh my God.
We're watching all the baby videos now.
Watching
other women give birth, and we're like, oh boy.
It's coming.
Yeah. People, yeah, she's coming.
She's, oh goodness, I'm so excited for you.
Me too. I just can't wait to hold her.
little one. Rich Barris is doing his podcast right now titled Inside the Numbers. It's Donald Trump versus Kamala Harris.
Oh yeah, well that's an interesting way of putting it.
Yeah.
That's an interesting way of putting it.
They're really going to go with it. Rich. They're really going to go with it. They're going to go with that ticket. I can't believe it. Yeah. So Larry Schweikert just said, by the way, for all of you out there that are sure that someone's going to come back in and replace Joe Biden, absentee ballots go out 60 days before the election or September 3rd, and they have to be printed before that around August 25th to allow time to correct errors. He has 13 days. It's not happening.
13 days to drop out?
13 days for them to be able to switch him in order to get on the absentee ballots correctly.
Okay, so yeah.
This is it. This is the ticket. Biden-Harris. This is it. They're not doing any of that stuff we thought they were going to do in That's it for today.
All right.
I had a bunch of other stuff on here, but I'm just in one of those moods.
Well, I think we got a lot done.
Yeah, it was just a lackadaisical day. I'm in one of those moods, but it's fine. You have been listening to the Dark to Light podcast with
Frankie Val on the drums and
Beans. You can hear us every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at 2:30 Eastern on TuneIn, Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, and RadioInfluence.com. We will see you on Friday.
See you there. Later.
This is a Live Bold and Boss Up quick fix on Radio Influence.
So what about next doing video interviews? Mm. What's different about the video and the phone?
Yeah, so video, you want to be conscious of what's behind you, right? So they can, you have, you know, your video camera up on your computer. They can see you, but they can also see what's behind you. So making sure that it's professional looking. If you don't have anywhere that's professional looking or you're worried about what they would think, just get a blank wall. That's fine too.
Yeah. No fake backgrounds. I don't like those.
Don't do that. No. Don't do the virtual. What is it? Is it virtual backgrounds or? Yeah.
The bridge in the background. What is that? San Francisco bridge or the animals or any of that.
Don't do that. Right. And then, don't do that. Just don't. I agree.
And dress like it's an in-person interview. So wear a suit, business professional, whatever the dress requirements is, make sure you know that ahead of time and always, you know, dress to impress. Mm-hmm. Put your best foot forward. I think it's better to, you know, if you don't exactly know what the dress code is, wear a suit. Definitely dress up.
Dress up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, wear the whole thing. Although it's a video interview, you don't want to accidentally stand up or something and have your boxer shorts on or, you know, something inappropriate underneath. So,
although it would probably be really funny, but don't do it on an interview.
Not for an interview.
Live Bold and Boss Up with Stephanie Marchese and Ashley Jaraki can be found on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, Google Podcasts, the iHeartRadio app, Spotify, and RadioInfluence.com.